in the Bible that shows us what we could do? That gives us an example? Gives us a clue. For crying out loud, we'll take anything. Yeah, there is. There is some biblical instruction. It comes from the book of Daniel. If you've got your Bible, you can turn to Daniel chapter 4. The book of Daniel, let me tell you what Daniel. Daniel means God is my judge, or my judge is God. Important for this. Important. It's critical. God is directing the world. When it comes to the book of Daniel, everything shifts in his era because the nation of Israel is in captivity. He's one of the first guys to go of high rank. His parents were rich, famous, and in charge. And Daniel is taken off into captivity. And now Israel and the captives are in Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar's the man in charge. And by the way, Hitler looked like a wuss compared to Nebuchadnezzar. Got it? We're not dealing with a fun fellow that likes to have croquet parties on the lawn. But God is now saying, I'm going to change my program and show you. I'm going to direct the world through the nations. Not just through Israel, but through the nations. And so the entire book of Daniel is a composite of us proving, God proving to us, I'm in control. So what do we do? Great, Daniel. God does use believers to direct the nations, but how in the world does he do it? In the first chapter, we see God directing the world, and he uses how he does that is by believers' dedication. He says, look, you dedicate yourself to me, I'll use you. Second chapter, the believers pleading for God's mercy to speak his plans to leaders so they understand what he wants. Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 3. God leads the nations by believers paying with their life. This ain't no free ride on a train, folks. It's going to cost you your life. Daniel 3. Daniel 4. God shows that he's directing the world by believers righteously, humbly speaking the truth to authority. Now, if you're a millennial, that rankles you most likely because all authority is supposed to be challenged. At least distrust it. And this is a different viewpoint from Daniel. Believers righteously, humbly speaking the truth to authority. And that's where we start. That's where we start in the chapter 4. And we have to look at this, and let's learn some lessons from chapter 4. The important thing to learn in chapter 4 is God is going to manage the nations, and he's going to do it. And first of all, he's going to do it by exploiting problems. He takes a problem and he says, look, I'm using this. And that's what we find in Daniel. And first chapter, verse 1 through 3 is basically the preamble to this whole thing. This is being said, verse 1 through 3 is being said after all the events. This is the king's testimony. He's actually saying, let me tell you what I learned. So we get to verse 4, and this is where the real story starts. I, Nebuchadnezzar, relaxing on my house, on my porch. He was saying, oh man, he had luxurious living. And then basically he had a vision. Listen, it had a vision of his mind that frightened him badly and terrified him. He had a problem, a major problem. And guess where he got it? From the one who rules the world. So God basically exploits problems. And he says, no, it's time for me to start moving, and I'm going to show you how. And he scares this leader to death. So he calls his group in and he says, guys, let's get a round table here. What do I do? What does this mean? Okay? And essentially, his buddies say, oh, I don't know. You're good to go on this one, King, because we don't know. So what does he do? God says, I've got the people where I want them. Okay? God causes a dilemma, and then he takes an initiative to do something. He creates this dream. He gives it to the king. And the king goes start looking for an answer. He calls. He calls for his advisors. And they are totally worthless. Human deficiencies. Okay? Folks, how do we apply this to our lives? We need to understand that leaders seeking the problems is something to be grateful for. When they're looking for answers, hey, good. When they run everything through their system that they can come up with and they don't work, good. Because the issue is not what voting bloc is more important. The issue is not who do we get on the Supreme Court. The issue is not how do we get rid of Roe versus Wade. The issue is not how do we overturn immigration issues. That's not the issue. The issue is how do we get God to be understood by the leaders that He's in charge. We change our goal, we change our strategy. And that's what we're looking at. Leaders were seeking God. In this day, they were seeking any God. They had a whole mess of them, okay? And that's what the king was looking for. So we need to realize problems are going to be used by God. Instead of trying to avoid them, let's figure out what's He doing with them. Let's use them. Now that works in your regular life too. But if you would have told me that earlier this week, I would have kicked you. So God places His servant in the right place. And when He places His servant, God's servant connects. Verse 8. God placed Daniel later. Later entered Daniel. This is an important verse. And I'm trying my best not to get wrapped up in these verses because it's hard for me. But look at this. Daniel, later, he entered. And in parentheses in my text, whose name is Belteshazzar, after the name of my God. Okay? That's said there in the real. Okay? Belti was king, guardian, okay. Shazar was the concept of the king's name, okay. So basically, you protect the king. And that's what Belteshazzar means. And I recounted the dream to him as well, and saying, look, the chief magicians, they were lost, okay. They didn't have anything. But I know in whom resides you, the spirit of the holy gods. Important word, holy there. You had a study about it last week. Holy, separated, separate. Your God's different from the rest, Daniel. Okay? And in the pantheon of Babylon, this was a big thing. And He can help you understand this dream. And so, I want you to tell me what it means. So, basically, God places His servant. And then, verse 9 and 18... look at what the king says. I know you can give me the information. Give me the interpretation. And then in verse 18, later on, this is the dream that King Nebuchadnezzar saw. Now you, Belteshazzar, declare its interpretation, for none of the wise men in my kingdom were able to make it known to me, the interpretation. But you can do so. Why? For a spirit of the holy gods is in you. You're different. By the way, guess where that verse is? Look at your numbers. Look at the end verse. What's its number? The hinge point. Everything changes right there. When God shows up, things change. When the leaders say, okay, tell me what it means. Tell me what God says. Can you imagine you're sitting around with the Joint Chiefs of Staff on Monday morning with the president at the end of the table, and they're giving all their reports on what's going to happen this week and what they think should happen, and we should do this and we should do that and we should fix this and we should do this. And then the president at the end of the meeting looks at you and says, now what does God say we should do?
Hello, this is where Daniel's at.
Tell me what God thinks.
Look, you need to understand how you can apply this is that basically you are placed in a particular place by God to do something. You didn't get placed at the round table with the president. You got placed in a job. You got placed with a bunch of runny-nosed kids screaming their heads off. You got placed in a high school class. You got placed in an office with a bunch of other guys. That's where God placed you. He did that for a reason. It wasn't so you could endure and make money and get home. Okay? He's trying to control your business place through you. That's why you're there. So he places his servants there. We need to understand, that's why I need to be there. Because God put me here. And you need to recognize your place, where he put you, is so that he can influence and control the world through you. So then God decides in verse 18, or really verse 19 through 28, God uses his servant to explain and exhort. Guys, this is where we get scared. I get scared. You might not. I get scared. Now, what's the servant's work? What does the servant have to do? Daniel 19. Daniel's concern for his boss. Look at this. Then Daniel, whose name fell to Shazar, that's important again, was upset for a brief time. His thoughts were alarming him. The king said, Belteshazzar, don't let the dream and its interpretation alarm you. And then he said, Daniel says, sir, if only this dream were for your enemies and its interpretation applied to your adversaries. This is Hitler talking to him. Look at Daniel's attitude. We need to understand that Daniel was sitting there, and by the way, the king, when he took Daniel into captivity, castrated him, effectively taking his family away from him, effectively also removing him from the ability to go into his own temple in Jerusalem and worship. Why in the world did the king do these weird things? Because you were his. He owned you. Daniel didn't have kids. Daniel probably never had a family. You were never allowed to as a eunuch of the king. And yet he comes to the king and he says, man, I just wish this wasn't true about you. And he makes the interpretation of the dream. And he says, you know what? You're going to end up wandering around out in the field like an animal for 7 years. Until you what? Until you get sorry? Until you change your opinions on Roe versus Wade? And until you get the right party in office? Until you change the immigration issue? No, what? Until you acknowledge God as the one who's running the world. Now, the king says, all right, thanks for the information, Daniel. And he instantly went to his leaders and said, we got to get straightened out. No. What does he do? In fact, Daniel adds to this. He says, look, that would happen, but, verse 27, O king, may my advice be pleasing to you. Break away from your sins by doing what is right, and from your iniquities, listen to this, by showing mercy to the poor. Do you know how many times that phrase echoes throughout the Old Testament? And why was Israel condemned? One of the leading sins on Israel's sin record at the very top was ignoring the poor. And so he says, man, if you change, you might be able to avert this stuff. And what's Nebuchadnezzar do? Blows it off for a year. Year one. He blows it off, and at the end of year one,
He's standing up on top of his roof and he's looking over everything and he's saying, man, look at all this wonderful world that I'm in control of and playing. I have done this right. And on that instance, his brain goes haywire. And for 7 years, we have record of this. We have record that one of the kings of Babylon was literally went loony and they sent him out to live outside. Basically, they did what they always do with mentally ill people. Get them away. Ignore them. Maybe they'll die. For 7 years, this guy wandered around, foraging, getting whatever he could, in an insane situation. Look. That's where God says to us, look. I'm going to be running the world. God is the judge. And in this passage, he is trying to say, let me work. How long from the time Daniel interprets the dream until this king gets his brain back? He was a year ignoring it and 7 in out wandering around. How many years? 8. What's 2 terms of a presidency? I don't know. Maybe there's not a coincidence. But what did Daniel do during that time? He sat back and let God work. We have no record of what Daniel did. We don't know where he's at. We don't know what's happening. He's off in obscurity. How many of us can handle obscurity? If you don't know what it's like, John, where are you at? John Lum, raise your hand. I can see you. John, Wyoming's why is obscurity, right? Yeah. Yeah, just get out there to Wyoming. You know what obscurity is. You can live for a month without seeing another human. But all this happened so God could say, look, it's me who's running the world. And look at what, in verse 35, the king finally gets to this point. He says, all the inhabitants of the earth are regarded as nothing. He's talking about God, Yahweh. He does as he wishes with the army of heaven. The army of heaven. He does what he wants with the army of heaven and with those who inhabit the earth. And this is the one, when I read this, this is where the passage that God basically kicked me down the steps. No one slaps his hand and says, what have you done? Nobody answers to God. Not me. In other words, I don't hold God. Why'd you do that, God? What kind of merciful God would... Well, how come you haven't? Well, what's happening? God says, you don't. Nobody slaps my hand. I run the show. Including the spirit realm, the armies of heaven. Gotta let God do his work. So what does God desire? What is the... As we close, what is the thing that God really desires? What God really desires is our national and our leaders to acknowledge his supremacy. Folks, if that's the goal, maybe we should be headed more toward that goal. Maybe we should be doing things that help show how is God supreme. Now, how are we going to do that? Write letters? Well, we could. Emails would be easier. I don't think it's going to do it. You can talk to your congressman and vote the right people in. Yeah, maybe. I don't think that's going to do it. Why? Where did God put you? Now, if you're in D.C., in the government system, that's where God put you. But most of us are not there. How do we let God use us? How do we let God change the world through us? It's not too complicated. Our task is to righteously, humbly speak truth wherever God places us. Righteously, that means stop making your political opinions right. Go back to the book. Find out what the text says. Find out what God says. Find out what He's talking about and what He's doing. Humbly, you know, there's a lot of people in power that I think I'd be better off slugging than talking. But that's really not what God wants, because that's not a humble attitude. We learned that in Sunday school today. Humbly, speaking truth. Man, that is tough. Because half the time, I'm on the wrong side of it. And I have to admit my own weakness and my own incapacities. And I have to say, you and me were on the wrong side. We did it wrong. I hate failure and I hate acknowledge that I am. And yet, humbly, righteousness, need to speak the truth. Man, I was on the wrong side of that ball game and I didn't realize it. Or I did realize it and I just didn't want to give it up because I thought we were going to win. Where God places us. I don't know where He placed you. I know where He placed me. And that doesn't mean just your job, your home, and your little league team. That means wherever you're at. So you may be ministering in places in the grocery store standing in line. And I hate it when God makes me do that. But I think what we have to realize is who was Daniel? Who was Daniel? He was a captive. He was somebody that God said, your will, your freedom is taken away. You're a captive. And did Daniel sit there and fight for his rights? Did he get out the book, the Constitution, and try to make sure his constitutional rights were not violated? Or what did Daniel do? Well, Daniel recognized problems were from God, that he was placed in the right place by God, and he spoke the truth, and then he says, now God, do your work. And he sat around for 8 years waiting for it to happen. And guess what? Nebuchadnezzar's son comes next. Folks, just do this sometime. Take the first 6-7 chapters of Daniel, read through them quick. Somebody is always facing death. Okay? Chapter 1. Y'all don't eat the stuff, you die. Ooh, that's death number 1. Number 2, chapter number 2. He gets this vision, he can't remember the dream. He says, all right, all you guys, all you wise men, if you can't come up to me and tell me what the dream was and what it meant, you're dead. Death number 2. 3, if y'all don't bow down to this statue, you're going to get killed. Dead. Do you see, is there anything here that makes it kind of familiarity to you? 4, all right, Daniel, you're on the line. It's up to you. You tell me what this means. Oh, man, do I have to? Yeah, tell me what it means. You're going to be an idiot for 7 years. Ooh. How do you think Daniel felt saying that? Like, oh, no problem. Me and Nebi are real good friends. No, it's not. The dude was fearing for his life. You don't talk to kings that way. Not like one that's like Hitler. Chapter 5. What do we have in chapter 5? Handwriting on the wall. Do you see what's happening in the book of Daniel? God is appearing every doggone page, every incident, and He's putting His captives on the line. You're dead. You have a choice. Do what I tell you, or this guy's going to kill you. But if I do what I tell you, tell me, God, He's going to kill me anyway. Huh. So? And what's God do? Boom, boom, boom. It's not until we decide to let God put our lives on the line that we start recognizing that's what He wants. I want to jeopardize your life. Now, remember what the guys in chapter 3 said. He's able to deliver us, and if He doesn't, He won't. But we're still not serving you. We're not bowing down to that thing. And so He says, you're dead. Heat that sucker up. Let's go. Having a barbecue. And what do you see in every chapter? Every chapter, every chapter, somebody is being put on the line, and God is doing what? Announcing His supremacy. Folks, this is critical because Daniel is the turning point. It all flips with Ezekiel and Daniel. It's the times of the Gentiles. Until Messiah comes, it's the times of the Gentiles. And when Messiah comes and sets up his kingdom, he is trying to say, now I'm going to change the world through that instead of through the nations. But it's still the times of the Gentiles. And what I'm trying to help you understand is, you are at risk. It's good to be. Have at it. Your freedom is not freedom. Kevin, could you come up? I'd like to close in a poem. This is a meaningful poem to me. It's really a hymn written by a guy in the 1850s in Scotland. But it means a lot. I've updated a few of the words. It's called, "Make me a captive, Lord, and then I will be free. Force me to render up my sword, and then I'll conquer be. I sink in life's alarms when by myself I stand. So imprison me within your arms, and strong will be my hand. My heart, it's weak and poor until its master finds. It has no spring of action, sure. It varies with the wind. I cannot freely move until you have wrought my chain. Its flag, enslave me with your matchless love, and deathless I shall reign. My power is faint and low till I have learned to serve. It lacks the needed fire to glow. It lacks the breeze to nerve. It cannot drive the world until itself is driven. Its flag can only be unfurled when you breathe from heaven. My will is not my own till you have made it yours. If it would reach the leader's post, it must be taught to serve. It only stands unbent amid the clashing fight when on your side it leans and finds in you its life. Be a captive. Be like Daniel. There's nothing the world can do to you. I've been there, I've been back. Charge ahead.